But from the buyer's perspective, the argument would be, well, those people are really critical to the deal, and I'm going to pay more for the business overall because I have this hook into the founders. And so you're all going to agree that it's better at the end of the day for me to give the founders this structure rather than giving everybody all the consideration up front and me take the risk that these guys are going to leave. And so there's some interesting questions around how do you structure this revest so that you think about, for example, how it's characterized from a tax perspective. So there are ways to structure it. So, and we're between the bar sessions here, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on the technicalities because we could spend an hour on how you think about this. But just so that the room is aware, there are ways to structure a revest so that it's not recharacterized as ordinary income. So for example, if you're using buyer stock as consideration and you're exchanging essentially founder's unvested stock in the target for buyer's vested stock, if that founder files an 83B election in connection with closing, then they can get tax-deferred treatment on their consideration that's being deferred the same way that they, you know, so they can still be eligible for capital, long-term capital gains, for example, if they meet the holding period. If you do it wrong, you can bust it, and then suddenly, you know, especially in the cash context, which there, again, are ways to potentially structure around this, but there's a risk that you end up in a world where there's not clear IRS guidance on how to deal with this, and you end up with recharacterization as ordinary income, which obviously is significant, under current tax rules, is significantly different for the founders versus just getting their deal consideration up front. And so without getting into all the weeds, what I would say to us as M&A lawyers is, as you're thinking about how to structure a transaction, you probably want to bring your benefits and tax people. I mean, I think we all often talk to tax people at the LOI stage, but you might not think about talking to your benefits folks at the LOI stage. But if you're considering this, making sure that people understand the tax impact of a revest so that you're thinking about it in terms of overall value, I think is really critical.
Yeah, you know,
when you deliver that structure from counsel or people on the other side who haven't seen this before, the reaction is, well, if you're conditioning it on employment, then it's comp.
Mm-hmm.
That's immediately the response, which is kind of, that's the starting point of the analysis, but it shouldn't be the answer. So,
right, yeah, and let me just say, to put this into perspective, this revesting structure is probably the single most important change over the last 15 to 20 years that we've seen in tech M&A, and it came out of California. And it's probably no accident that it came out of California originally, because in California, it's a lot harder for tech companies to retain their valuable tech employees, these lauded engineers and worshipped scientists. And one of the reasons it's harder to do that in California is non-competes, which is a traditional way to help retain these valued employees, aren't generally enforceable as they are in some other jurisdictions.
And especially an employment-related non-compete is unenforceable.
Yeah.
There's only one narrow circumstance where there's an exception to the public policy, which there's actually a stated public policy against non-competes in California. But M&A is the one context where you can get an enforceable non-compete. But that, to your point, Rick, that's exactly that's the reason for all of this in California is people can leave too easily. Some other people may have views of this. My personal opinion is that the California system, which seems odd to people that are not in it, it works exceptionally well, and it prevents people from taking things they shouldn't be taking, but allows people to go work somewhere else if they want to go work somewhere else.
Right.
Anyway.
It's the sauce of the valley, I think, is what most people will tell you.
Yeah.
No California bias on this panel at all.
No whatsoever.
Yeah.
Two other comments on the revest structure. One is that, unlike an earnout, usually a revest is really purely a time-based dynamic, where as long as the founder sort of shows up and doesn't literally go buy their yacht and leave, they can earn their earn the rest of their revested, their sort of revested portion of it. The other is there are obviously some other dynamics that you'd want to think about, like what happens if the acquiring company gets acquired. You know, there may be acceleration events that make sense for the founder that's agreed to revest their shares.
And I think it's fair to say, by the way, that virtually every major large cap or mega cap serial tech acquirer in the tech arena insists on revesting.
They use the structures.
Yeah. There was a while where some did and some didn't, but now it's almost universal.
And to be clear, this is not valuation. This is not their way of taking the top off the cost of the company. This is their way of making sure the people that they want stay. Right.
That's right.
Yeah, and so as I said at the beginning of this section, employees all the way up and down the roster hold equity, and so as a buyer, you also have to think about, well, how do you retain the rest of the employee base, or how much do you care about retaining the rest of the employee base? There are a lot of tech transactions that have closing conditions, for example, where you might say, these people, we need to make sure they're here at closing, these specified individuals, which we'll call key employees, and then in addition to that, or maybe separately from that, you would say, this percentage of the rest of the employee base has to stay. And so there are different ways to think about closing conditionality that really put the value of the team being there on the closing date in the agreement. But for those individuals that are sort of in this other bucket of not key employees, those people, you're going to have to figure out what to do with their equity awards that they currently have. And so most tech companies, their option plans will say that their options should be cashed out or they can be assumed by the buyer. And so if you have a deal that has cash consideration, especially if it's full cash consideration, I would say, at least in my practice, virtually all of those deals, you're going to cash out the options. That's the easiest thing to do, which means the vested options will receive cash.